This week on Straight Talk Africa, artificial intelligence is a game changer worldwide. On the African continent, scientists are partnering with developers using AI to push the boundaries in medicine and business. Can artificial intelligence become an engine of growth in Africa? Can it aid in meeting some of the sustainable development goals? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm your host, Vincent McCory. Artificial intelligence is reshaping our interactions with the world around us and on a daily basis. And often we do not even realize it. We might routinely ask Google Home or Alexa about the weather forecast or the news of the day. They are our virtual assistants, as they are called, and they use AI. In Microsoft Word, AI checks our grammar, spelling, and often finishes our sentences. Artificial intelligence is powering creativity across many fields on the African continent and is shaping a generation of developers who are creating new applications that often try to tackle a problem in an underserved community that might not have access to doctors or to banking. Let's go now to our technology reporter, Paul Ndio, who is closely following the AI developments in Africa. Paul, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. And
thanks,
let's
start
with the very basics. What really is AI?
Well, the term or the concept of AI has been around since the 1950s. It was first coined by a gentleman called John MacArthur at Dartmouth College here in the United States. Simply put, artificial intelligence is computers or machines that are learning to be like humans, to think like humans. In most cases, these are super machines or supercomputers that have the ability to think, to analyze data, for example, in a very, very short time.
Mm-hmm. Now, some may not realize, but in some, what areas is AI used on a daily basis that sometimes we may not even think about it?
Right now, these cameras that you see, that's AI in action. We use AI almost on a daily basis. From the moment I wake up to the time I go home, it's all AI. My phone, the first thing I touch on my phone, it tells me the weather. It tells me how long it's going to take me to get to work. The emails, the Teams that we use, that's AI, but people don't think about it. Think about you making a Skype call to anywhere in Africa. That's AI, but we don't think about it like that. Until recently, most people were not talking about AI in those terms. But when you think about it, everything that we do, from driving our cars to these self-driving cars, that's all AI.
People thought it's something that is going to come and then we'll see it and find out how it looks like. But
apparently
it's all around us. But then now you've been interacting with so many people across the continent in the field of AI. How widespread is the use of AI, especially at the local level, in manners or in ways that are beneficial to the people?
The advantage that Africa has is the ability to leapfrog, just like they did with mobile. We didn't have the infrastructure to go and build that, so we leapfrogged. The same thing is happening with AI. You have a lot of people on the continent who are already using AI in all fields, from healthcare to insurance to schools, education. People are applying all these. Even in politics, you'll be surprised how many countries are using AI to analyze data, especially during elections. Mm-hmm. But broadly speaking, I think this is something that is going to take Africa to the next level. You have a lot of people who are using AI in different fields, different sectors, to get ahead. It's creating jobs on the continent. You have a lot of young people who have figured out how to use these tools, and they are going places.
And even older people like yourself, I think you fiddled around with AI. Yourself.
Absolutely. I've been experimenting with a lot of stuff for learning purposes. I've created content using all sorts of tools. I've built my own.
I saw you, man.
I've built my own AI chatbot that I'm trying to, you know, to mimic what I do. So a lot of young people are doing stuff like that, and it's just the sky is the limit for most of us.
Indeed, AI is here with us. Paul Dio, thank you very much. Paul Dio is a technology reporter for VOA Africa. Now for more insight into artificial intelligence applications in Africa, we go to Rose Nakasi, a lecturer at Makerere University, head of the Makerere AI Health Lab, and a fellow at Google AI for Google Global Goals. And she's joining us from Kampala in Uganda. And from Nairobi, Kenya, we are joined by Ambassador Philip Thigo, who is a special envoy on technology for Kenya. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we start with a lady in Kampala, Dr. Nakasi. First, how are you intending to use AI, especially in delivering health services in Uganda?
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to be on the show. How we are using artificial intelligence in revolutionizing healthcare here at the Makerere Artificial Intelligence Health Lab is that, first of all, we look at the most pressing healthy challenges in our context. For example, if you look at a scenario like malaria, which is one of the endemic diseases, we usually draw from the motivation of the fact that if a particular disease is correctly and accurately diagnosed, then we believe that better patient outcomes will always follow. So from our perspective is that we come from the context where we have very few skilled technicians to be able to carry out the gold standard mechanism for diagnosing some of these diseases like malaria, tuberculosis, and pathological concerns, for example, cervical cancer. So the way we try to come from that is that, well, there is a challenge in most of our contexts where we have very few trained experts, but then we have microscopes, which are the gold standard mechanism for diagnosing some of these diseases. Also backed by the fact that we have technologies such as mobile smartphones, even in highly endemic settings, but also the cross, the cutting-edge technologies such as artificial intelligence that are available to our end, we are able to leverage it to be able to support in detection of some of these diseases.
Yes. Now, I was thinking that it can also be used even in pregnancy situations where you could possibly use AI to foresee what possible complications a mother could encounter throughout a, you know, a time of carrying the baby, and that way you're able to intervene. Is that something that is being applied right now?
Yes, we actually looking at also capturing, not only capturing and monitoring pregnancies, but also predicting fetal errors that could happen before the baby is born, so that any interventions that can be provided to the mother before the baby is done are put into considerations. Challenges such as that are also supported through intelligence.
All right. Now let's go to Nairobi. Ambassador Thigo, we're happy to have you back. So the question of AI, of course, as has been mentioned even by my colleague, that it is all around us. We cannot avoid it. Question is, at this point, to what extent have we as a continent in Africa embraced AI in all sectors of our lives, in all aspects of our lives, and how is that being especially pushed by governments?
Thank you so much, Vincent, for having me in the show. I think let's start by the Africa Union, which has recently actually adopted an AI strategy for the continent. I think we are, in that sense, we almost have a continental policy framework for adopting artificial intelligence. Secondly, if you look at countries like Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, Rwanda, Ghana, Senegal, they've actually been deploying at the government level artificial intelligence in many ways. Ghana, for example, deploys AI around their statistical offices, building in models around understanding population densities, movements, mobility. Senegal is the same. Kenya, largely around the Hustler Fund, as you've known it, where AI is helping on credit scoring, understanding people's financial flows and income. Rwanda, of course, around their traffic management system, Zipline, that actually drops or airdrops medical commodities and supplies. So AI in the continent is actually deployed at scale and at government level. So I think Africa is one of the continents that is actually deploying AI at scale, but to my previous speaker's point, to actually solve problems. It's not about self-driving cars, as Ndio has been mentioning, but it's really how do we use AI to solve the challenges that we have in Kenya, including even crops. So understanding crop diseases and farmers being very precise around their crops, yes. Weather data around that, yes.
Yeah, and I want to... Steve, I may stay with you briefly in terms of course, applying this, especially in areas which are extremely beneficial to the people. People may want to know about the infrastructure. What infrastructure is needed? What level of access do the people have in terms of the education or the knowledge related to AI and the application and use of it in all these different sectors?
I agree. So I think at different levels, right? So you have, it's what I call fluency, is how are you fluent around this new technology? So of course, there's a technical level, which we need a lot of, if you look at a lot of our startups, a lot of our developers, including the big tech companies that now have hubs in the continent, Nigeria, Ghana, get a technical level of Africans who are actually deploying large language models, including sort of digitizing local languages. So I think there's that kind of sophistication which exists, and we don't have to be all that. We have machine learning experts and data scientists who are also kind of driving this revolution, again, at a very highly technical level. Then when you come to the policy level, we have policymakers now, and we have very sort of able ministers. Minister Paula of Rwanda, Minister Bosun of Nigeria, kind of leading the policymaker space around understanding safe, secure, and inclusive regulation that does not stifle innovation. So there's a there's sort of fluency around that particular point. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk about infrastructure, of course, there are challenges. And I'll be very honest, right? AI depends a lot on compute power. We don't have that in the continent, so we depend now a lot on the big tech companies. Only Morocco has compute, so we need to invest in that. When it comes to data, we are not necessarily investing our data. So that's why you don't see a lot of African sort of data on this AI space. Mm-hmm. Then you see a lot of biases. So we need to invest in that. And then on the talent part, and I'm glad that we have a colleague from Makerere University, is our education system is not churning out talent fast enough for this revolution. Let me remind you that the current iteration of GPT or ChatGPT is only 22 months old. So I'm varying the definitions of AI, right? So there's the old AI, what we call narrow artificial intelligence, that was the 1950s, and now generative artificial intelligence, which is 22 months old, which is what now you see is being used by everybody else.
And I think Africa is starting almost from the present, so has a certain level of advantage. But it's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the use of artificial intelligence on the continent. Stay with us.
Of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
The United States Agency for International Development reveals that malnutrition remains a significant challenge in Nigeria, with severe acute malnutrition impacting 3.6 million children and contributing to 50% of all deaths among children under 5 years old. This week on Our Voices, we'll talk with the talented Nigerian Nollywood actress Chioma Chukwuka Apota, the USAID Goodwill Ambassador for Nutrition. She'll talk about her journey and efforts on fighting malnutrition during the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. We are discussing how artificial intelligence is used on the continent, the opportunities it presents to serve communities that do not have easy access to services such as healthcare, banking, or education. My guests are Rose Nakasi, lecturer at Makerere University, head of the Makerere AI Health Lab, and a fellow at Google AI for Global Goals. And from Nairobi in Kenya, Ambassador Philip Tigo, Special Envoy on Technology for Kenya. Now, Dr. Nakasi, I wanted to kind of advance the conversation on how widespread this AI use can be in Uganda, for example, to help advance or solve some of the problems. So, for example, you have the Makerere AI Lab. Somebody in, say, Nakasero, somebody in Gulu or somebody in Kabale, for that matter, may want to know, how is this going to help me solve my issues here at the local level?
So at the local level, and exactly that is the pressing goals for the solutions that we develop in Makerere to be able to tackle some of those pressing challenges, especially in areas which are restrained in terms of resources. When you look at some of the applications, such as in healthcare and in agriculture, you realize that those are some of the very pressing challenges. When you look at a problem such as malaria, which is very endemic, and our proposition to the people that we're supporting is that can we be able to come up with a solution that is able to fit within their resource-constrained settings, but again, is a solution that is going to fit within the infrastructure that is in our context. So we're supporting, for example, the development of applications that are able to diagnose some of these diseases and putting them on low resource settings, for example, on a mobile phone, which is easily accessible. But even in scenarios where we don't have good infrastructure, we need to develop applications that fit within the existing infrastructure. You realize that in most of the remote settings, we don't have internet facility. So can we be able to come up with solutions that are tailored to run even without an internet infrastructure within such a context? We have agriculture being one of the major economic backbone for the country. So, and the biggest challenges that farmers face are the pests and diseases. So can we be able to leverage artificial intelligence to be able to detect those diseases and survey and provide surveillance systems that can be able to communicate to stakeholders so that they receive timely interventions so that the problem does not escalate to negatively impact the livelihoods here. So the motivation behind the solutions that we develop are those that should be tailored to fit within the context and to be able to salvage and counter some of the most pressing challenges in our context.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I wanted to go to Ambassador Thigo, especially when we look at the bigger picture here. We have things like the Sustainable Development Goals, and people in Africa, of course, are hungering for economic development. In which way can AI power economic growth on the continent specifically?
I think if you look at the Sustainable Development Goals, and it's good you raise this point, is that we just came out of the UN General Assembly, 79, and you know we just adopted the Future Pact and the Global Digital Compact. The idea of the Global Digital Compact, which is the annexure to the Pact or the Future Pact, is because digital transformation and especially artificial intelligence can catalyze or accelerate implementation of SDGs at least in the next 5 years, because we know we are 5 years out and we are behind, we are really behind. So how can the continent benefit from this? As you know, as part of the UN AI advisory body, and we came up with, I think, about four key points. One was that we need, as a continent, if we are to address the Sustainable Development Goals, is to ensure that we have a common understanding on what are the benefits of AI to society. So we need our scientists, so the Makerere University and all these universities, to work concertedly in terms of understanding better this problem. Secondly, we need a policy dialogue around how do you have an enabling policy that then ensures that we govern AI, even understanding the risks. And I know we've not talked about the risks in this program, because we are seeing the risks around misinformation, disinformation, but also loss of human agency, because you cannot relegate all decisions to machines. The other piece, of course, is capacity development. These things are not simple, right? So we need to build capacity across the continent on how to leverage on AI-enabled services. The last one is financing. And you know that's where the problem comes when it comes to the continent, is we need to put our own money into artificial intelligence, because that's how then we begin to invest in our problems. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't do that, anybody putting in money, as you know, will invest to solve their problems. So for me, that's always the issue.
Yeah.
Are we putting our own money to invest in these capabilities?
It's a quite sensitive area, because we have a lot of external interested parties that want to come to the continent, of course, and invest in this, but of course becomes a bit suspect. And we'll talk about regulation also, because we'll also want to touch on those risks that are inherent in that, and also talk about, for example, the ISO, for example. But I want to go to Uganda, Dr. Nakasi, in terms of empowering the people, empowering the youth. There you are at the university. You are teaching, you're lecturing students there to kind of understand how AI works and see how they can become also users of that. But do we want to wait for kids to come to university for us to expose them to AI? Or what would you tell those who have the power to kind of introduce this a bit earlier? What would you say? Do we want to introduce this a bit earlier before kids even come to university?
Yes, that's very, very necessary. When you look at the way COVID happened and it struck us by surprise, but the essential part of it is that it opened our minds to realizing that actually technology and artificial intelligence is not just something that we can take lightly, but something that is now a necessity. And it comes at a time when we should be able to infuse it in every aspect of our lives, be it in education, be it in any particular kind of sector. So what that means is that since it is a necessity, it should be incorporated even from the low levels within the curricula, so that students or learners start to, engage with it, appreciate it, and that is when it will be impactful in the longer range. So I just want to reach out, and I'm glad that this platform gives us that opportunity to be able to reach out to the stakeholders, to be able to kind of try to now engage in conversations, settings that should be able to bring artificial intelligence to be incorporated within the student curriculum, mm-hmm. even at lower levels. Not just in curricula, but also engaging them in practical sessions where they are able to appreciate the impact. over-nutrition.
And that's really critical, not just using it and having fun, but along the way learning how you could individually use it to solve problems. Now, Ambassador Thigo, let's talk a little bit about the risks we talked about, the inherent in artificial intelligence, which has been a concern for a long time, but then the regulations that are coming up. I mean, we have, for example, the International Organization for Standardization and the International Electrotechnical Commission trying to come up with some regulation in order for us to feel a bit comfortable. So how does that work, and how can that work without being restrictive? Oh, we don't have your audio there.
I'll talk about these two. I apologize. Okay, I'll talk about those two parts, right? So you realize that the problem has been fragmentation. So you have those two institutions, and I think we've counted 6 or 7 others. And the challenge is that when specific bodies start to develop regulations, they become very fragmented. So the first solution we did, at least at the United Nations, as governments, was to pass the first ever resolution on artificial intelligence. And it was very specific. Is how do we ensure a safe, secure, inclusive, and trustworthy AI development and use for sustainable development? So that was a big, big milestone in May of this year, so that it grounds how artificial intelligence is developed. The second part, of course, was the Global Digital Compact. And what the GDC speaks about is these large commons, and I mentioned the commons, right? You need a common understanding. So how do you have an international scientific panel so that anybody passing regulations is based on the science? It needs to be the similarly to what we've seen with climate, right? So if you look at the 1.5C, it means that the regulations are uniform. So we have an international agreed scientific panel that actually does that. So for me, that's really what we need to seek, where we ensure that we have an international agreed common understanding of how to regulate this technology. It is multi-stakeholder. But it's just not the business of government to regulate, because let's agree, right? These companies are way, way ahead. OpenAI's strawberry model came out 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's 5 times smarter than 4.0. So think about if you pass regulations 1 month ago, right? Will it capture this development? It doesn't. Mm-hmm. So we need almost a different posture of regulation, which is why you are seeing many of us are calling agile regulations that are based on both soft regulations mm-hmm. and then hard commitments, right? Yeah. So you need to balance those two.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, Dr. Nakasi, in terms of collaboration between government agencies and the private sector, what are you seeing there, and how can it better be done in order to achieve the ultimate objectives for the entire society in a more smoother way without being suspicious of each other?
Collaborations are built on trust and impact. We all have in research what we call common goals, especially around solving a particular problem. But trust is one of those that tops the list. So if you can be able to build collaborations that are based on trust, that are very inclusive, but at the end of the day looking at the bigger goal, which is solving a particular problem, then I believe that is one good way to start to build teams that are going to be useful and impactful in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And you have the last word there. We have to leave it right here. Rose Nakasi, head of the Makerere University Artificial Intelligence Health Lab, and Ambassador Philip Thigo, Special Envoy on Technology for Kenya. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. Check out Straight Talk Africa on social media. Like us on Facebook, follow us on X, watch us also on YouTube, and let us know what you think. I'll see you next time.